Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Climate change is happening. Counterpoint, it isn't. But that guy's probably right, actually.
That's exactly right.
Well, welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast, the Lore Boys. Today, we're jumping into a new Magic the Gathering story of Dominaria United and the real kickoff of the Phyrexian invasion. I do want to call out, like, pretty early on that I was going to do, oh my god, I forgot what it was called. It's not Kaldheim. I was going to do another one that was requested very recently, and then I started doing that one, and then I was like, well, I want to do the Dominaria and Phyrexian arc before I jump into other things, because like it literally starts with like this, you know, it's like the one that I almost did that I didn't do was like, oh, it's a feudal knight kingdom, and the boy king is the one who survived the Phyrexian invasion, and I was like, okay, well, I'll go do the fucking Phyrexian invasion.
Yeah.
And we're going to gloss over the Nicol Bolas and chapter, I guess, during this episode. So there's one that was a hard reminder when I was already 4 hours into the script. Like, fuck, I never did that either.
Yeah.
I'm your host, Ethan Palmer. With me, as always, is
James Miller. I'm here. I'm ready to play. I place myself in defensive mode, ready to listen.
Face down, ass up. That's defensive mode.
Mm-hmm. I am Peter O'Donoghue. My favorite member of the Gatewatch is the Pot of Greed, actually, which allows you to draw two additional cards. The meme says three, but it is two additional cards. Pot of Greed, and I know this is not Yu-Gi-Oh. I'm ready, guys. I know there's no defensive positions.
It do work like that.
Yeah.
So more Magic, and specifically the Phyrexians, has been requested by many people over the years. This one specifically for the Phyrexian Invasion continuation and Dominaria United, kind of more loosely, comes from Mr. Sugarhype, Lorbonian Wizard, and Mr. Avocado Man over at discord.gg/theloreboys. Oh no, discord.gg/loreboys. I even wrote it. My brain is just like too dumb. discord.gg/loreboys. That's clear.
If you're confused,
right?
Just check the link in the description.
There's
it's
a
right
link
there.
In the description.
Yeah, you can just click it. Yeah.
Click it, dummy. Don't listen to me, a dummy. we have a lore request channel there where you can pop in and request whatever you want. Make it Zoids, request a million times a day. I don't fuck. Here's the behind the scenes, guys. I don't fucking care if you do. Go nuts. Pop off, children.
I read every message. Ethan doesn't. As you can tell.
I don't anymore either, because I was like, oh yeah, Zoids, eh? Okay.
Yeah. I'm still the unpaid mod on the cast. We've got an actual mod, but I'm the other one. Yeah,
he's the real unpaid mod.
Yeah. Sort of paid, but anyways,
exposure.
Sure. Yeah. I don't even know what Jamie means by that sort of
thing. Like, I don't pay him.
I mean, I get Patreon. Yeah, but you guys do too.
Oh,
but you don't.
I was talking about
you.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about David. You don't pay that poor child.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah, Lore Boy's putting him through college.
That I call him that poor child. Is a full grown ass man going to college, working three jobs, like
working night shift,
moderating the Discord.
But we should yell at him more. I don't think
I'm so tired. I need to check if there's racism on the Lore Boy's server. It's like, no, you need to sleep, Mike.
And if you want your request to have like a little bit of extra oomph, you can always join our Patreon, patreon.com/loreboys, where we have some new patrons this week, I believe, Peter.
We do, yeah. We have Trevor Owens. Oh my god. Kieran Tragus. I'm sorry, it's very Gaelic. Peter's secret love child. Tell me who your mom is in the comments.
That's a resub. That was Penn.
Oh, is it? Yeah, oh, okay. Good. Sorry. And then Joseph Roger as well. So thank you.
And you fucking son of a bitch, Joey. Jaboogly. This goddamn, if this is actually the Joseph Roger that Jamie and I went to school with growing
up. I checked the email. I'm pretty sure it's him.
You fucking son of a bitch, Jaboogaloo.
Yeah. I used to spend every weekend sleeping on his floor, and his wonderful mother would make us the best breakfast.
I'll come out and say it. He's the reason I flunked out of school the first time.
All
I did was go to his place, get high, and play Mario Kart. Like, it was all my entire freshman year. So
my first drink, his sister bought us a bunch of coolers, and we broke some glass on the carpet, and I remember picking it up with like my drunk hands, and his sister's like, don't do that.
Cool.
Thank you, everybody, regardless, whichever thanks. Joseph Roger you are,
except for you fucking son, you fucking squirrely son of a bitch, Joe. Cool. So let's talk about a Magic the Gathering story. So we're kind of continuing the Phyrexian invasion. You guys will remember we talked about a little bit about Kaldheim. It's like the Viking world. We talked about Tybalt and all that. We talked about Kamigawa, which was kind of like the first plane that the Phyrexians sort of invaded three planes kind of simultaneously. After we also talked about New Phyrexia a second time. Like we did two episodes on New Phyrexia, including like the more recent one. And the Phyrexians are unable to planeswalk. They need the assistance of somebody else. So Tezzeret, they got in touch with Tezzeret, a planeswalker who helped them to send their bodies to other planes. When they do so, you guys will remember, all the organic material of their body is destroyed and they are left with just the metallic pieces and they have to slowly like regenerate themselves.
Yeah, that's, the primary one in Kamigawa was Jin Gitaxis, right? He was the main guy.
Exactly.
It's so weird. Sometimes you like present me something sometimes. It's just like a regular name. Just like, oh yeah, so this week we did an episode about John Smith. We're doing John Smith part two next week. And I'm like, ah, oh, some guy or whatever. But yeah, like the horrible space monster called Jin Gitaxis. I'm just like, I know that guy. I can pull that out at any
point. I remember some basement lab with a bunch of like animal spirits in boxes and Jin Gitaxis was there. Yeah.
Yeah, with the soul key or whatever, that thing.
Yeah, it was Lumiere hooked up to an IV machine, a ghost IV or whatever.
That's what
I
drew, but I don't remember what the thing was called, the relic he was using to drain.
I don't remember what it was called either, so don't worry about it. that's probably the required reading that anybody listening needs to know. If you want some like bonus content, honestly, our first Magic the Gathering episodes are going to, a lot of those details are going to feature pretty heavily. Super not required. If you haven't listened to it, I don't fucking remember what we talked about back there, except for like one or two odd bits. So you're no more in the dark than I was whenever I was writing this. So our story today is going to begin deep within the caves of Koilos, which right away they featured heavily in the first episodes where we talked about Urza and Yawgmoth.
Yeah, isn't Urza's like set up or something like that? Like
so
he sets up his like or something there.
Not quite. So the caves of Koilos exist beneath like the main city in Dominaria, and there are these radioactive caves that are like stock full of all these Thran artifacts, and Thran are this like ancient civilization. The poor people are kind of forced to live in the caves.
Okay.
They get kind of radiation sickness, and then this guy Yawgmoth shows up and says like, hey, why don't you guys like all open a rift, you guys can all come with me to this new plane, we'll give you this like beautiful paradise, and he turns them all into Phyrexians. That's like the birth of the Phyrexians.
Okay.
Starts in the caves of Koilos, basically.
Oh, well, if you have radiated flesh, that's a pretty good deal, you know?
They had a good deal.
You teleport.
Yeah, anyway, I thought Caves of Koilos was going to be a snake pit for sure.
It's more Greek than you think.
Okay.
It's yogurt.
Our story begins with a bunch of snakes. Fuck it.
Peter, he's more Greek than you think.
I am.
Put that on a piece of corn. We're in the Caves of Koilos. Karn, the silver golem planeswalker, whom we've talked about a few times now. He's working tirelessly to uncover the secrets of operating an artifact he's found, one he believes can help him defeat the Phyrexians. So Karn is in the irradiation caves.
It's just a gun. He doesn't know how to pull the trigger.
Just picturing him. Safety's on the whole time.
I'm just picturing him like accidentally misfiring it like right into the center of his forehead, but he's made it pure fucking silver. So it's just like just embeds like a quarter inch into the forehead, basically. Like out after a second, like curious.
Dude, I watched all the new Always Sunny last night, and one of the episodes is Frank shoots every single member of the gang. Yeah, just gotta go watch it. It's very good.
That sounds very good.
Yeah.
The gang tries to stop the Phyrexians.
Yeah. So right now we're either before like the new invasion of Kamigawa or like concurrent with it, like Jin Gitaxias is maybe getting set up there, but his spot's probably not yet quite blown up. Okay. Because it was Jin Gitaxias to Kamigawa. It was Vorinclex or Urabrask? One of the two. I think it was Vorinclex to Kaldheim, the Viking land. And then it was Sjöldred, who was said to have gone to Dominaria. And I briefly mentioned that, I think, on the new Phyrexia episode. So for now, they've, as far as we know, they've either haven't spread out yet into the multiverse, or they have and they're just recovering. While Karn is deep underground in a radiation cave, being like, the fucking Phyrexians, man, the Phyrexians are coming. I can tell you, man. I can tell you. The microwaves in my teeth told me.
he's like pure chrome, but he still has a tinfoil hat on. That's the exact same color.
Yeah, don't wear your tinfoil hat into the radiation caves. It'll start sparking like a microwave. Yeah.
Oh, no, my robot creation is not microwave safe.
So while he's down here, this is shortly after Karn helped the Gatewatch in their fight against Nicol Bolas. So everyone is just celebrating the defeat of one great enemy of the multiverse, essentially. Everyone but Karn is essentially like, oh, this was great. Now we all get a chance to rest. Bad guys are done for a little bit. You know, we know how these stories go. but Karn is pretty obsessed. He senses the presence of Phyrexian agents on Dominaria in his heart of hearts. He is determined to thwart their plans to ensure his homeworld's safety. So you guys will remember Karn was created by Urza.
Yeah.
Not given a name or anything like that. Karn eventually convinced Urza to let him go to school. He made friends with some other planeswalkers, Joyra and Teferi.
Right. Their wizard school got attacked. Didn't he also become an artifact of some kind at one point? He became the Mirari.
He turned the Mirari into Memnarch. He turned the Mirari into something. So his whole thing is right. He can manipulate inorganic matter, like just with his mind. He could create a gun just with his mind.
Okay.
all the Americans just salivating all of a sudden. So
yeah. I was thinking he was just like without touching it, just like the like a perfect sheet of foil just like goes up and wraps it like a magic turban, like onto her head.
You guys have watched Avatar, right? He's a gunbender.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, Americans, if you put your mind to it, you can make guns, you can make bombs, you can put them wherever you like.
Believe in yourself, America. Exactly. Come on. You know what America needs? America needs a dose more of believing in itself.
Yeah, true. That's very true.
So Karn is hard at work. While he's exploring the caverns, one of his excavators breaks. He's adept at fixing machines because he can do it with his mind. He created Argentum. You guys will remember the plane of mathematical perfection for himself, which later became Meriden, which later became New Phyrexia. Right.
Oh yeah, he's at the core of New Phyrexia, right? He's like, isn't he like
he was
something?
we had found him there. He's no longer there. He was saved by Elspeth. We talked about that and I have a note in this later on. He was saved by Venser specifically, who had been poisoned by the Phyrexians and sacrificed himself and gave up his spark to save Karn, because he's like, I'm dying anyway, I'll save Karn. Karn as a result is immune to glistening oil now because of Venser's sacrifice for him, essentially. Whereas his heart is protected by Venser's Planeswalker Spark.
Okay, cool. Right.
So he created Argentum. He had left, you know, a vial of glistening oil and then had to leave the plane. And Memnarch, who used to be the Mirari, found it one day, touched it, and then turned into a Phyrexian and created New Phyrexia.
Right. Okay.
We have an episode on Argentum.
Memnarch and Ajani. We have an episode about them and their interaction. Yeah. I remember having to draw both of them. Memnarch is like kind of spider body, huge brain, and like regular guy face sort of thing. Yeah,
exactly. So he comes across this broken excavator. He decides to fix it, and it kind of gets back to work until, you know, he kind of leaves it for a second. He likes the Caves of Koilos. Most other planeswalkers, his number one thing about the Caves of Koilos and working here is that other planeswalkers don't really come here. Because of all the radiation, it like specifically for planeswalkers, it like will disrupt their magic, make it hard to cast spells, and like just give them a general sense of unease instead of, you know, like rotting away their flesh like it does to regular old humans.
Yeah, okay.
It's basically like unbearably disorienting for planeswalkers to be here. So Karn likes that. You know, he's tinkering with his little machines. Excavator breaks. He goes, he has a conversation with it because he's been all alone.
Ooh,
down here.
There, girl, you're working too hard. Like, puts a carrot in the bucket. Just like there.
Yeah, a metal carrot. Hold a handful with a flat palm, just like nuts and bolts. Like. Joyra. One of the other planeswalkers he came up with, a close friend, the one who gave him the name Karn. Maybe you guys will remember his name. He didn't have a name when he was created by Urza. When he first went to school, Teferi gave him the name Artie Shovelhead. And then Joyra said, no, that's a stupid name. You can be named Karn. Joyra's like worried about him. This is like his oldest friend. I'm getting a lot of romance vibes in this, you know, like Bicentennial Man or whatever.
Coincidentally, that's what he calls his excavator now, is Oily Shovelhead or whatever.
Oily Shovelhead.
Yeah.
Shovelhead. She's worried about him. She's questioning his belief in the Phyrexian threat at this point, which we know, you know, the dramatic irony is there where we're like, you're gonna be pretty wrong about that, Joyra. But she's like, come on, they were defeated centuries ago. Like, you're being paranoid.
The frogs are being made gay by the glistening oil. They just do that sometimes. Yeah, exactly. I'm telling you.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of talk about how, like, hey, it's the guilt you feel over Venser sacrificing himself to save you is like what's driving you to do this, blah, blah, blah. But they're all fucking wrong. He's whatever.
It's not survivor's guilt. It's just regular. I'm just right.
No, there's just fucking monsters. Like, I don't care. he remains pretty resolute in his conviction that the Phyrexians have returned to Dominaria. So I have a quote from, we're going to cover the first two stories by Langley Hyde in this Dominaria United arc. The first one, a quote from Echoes in the Dark. He liked working in the cave's silence. In the sun's absence, only the water's metronome drip measured out his days. He was alone here. Other planeswalkers didn't like the interplanar distortion that rubbed at their senses in the caves of Koilos. Karn didn't either, but he appreciated the isolation it gave him. He didn't have to answer questions or worry about whether the Phyrexians had gotten to someone, complicated them. He could seek the key to operating the Silex solitude. He would win the fight alone. What fight? Joyra had placed her hands on her hips in exasperation. Karn, the Phyrexians were defeated centuries ago, and these new ones you told me about are trapped on their plane. They're here, Karn had told her. Defeating the Phyrexians in combat means nothing. They aren't an army. They're hate embodied. They promise Dominaria's destruction.
Damn.
So I name dropped the artifact that he's been working on there, the Silex.
Silex of something?
The Golgothian Silex is what it is. I think this is probably the first time in the episode, in the podcast, that we looked up Golgotha, which is Calvary Hill, the hill that Jesus was crucified on. Don't know why they chose to name it this, because there's no, like, it's never used in this tense, Golgothian. The Silex itself was, if we go again way, way back, Urza, the first great hero of the Magic the Gathering universe storylines, essentially, had a brother, Mishra, and they were embroiled in this conflict, which came to be known as the Brothers' War.
Yeah.
At the end of which, basically, they had something like, they had these power stones, which they split in two, and they just like kind of split in two randomly. Urza got the strong one, and Mishra got the weak one, the weak power stone. And he just always like resented him for that. He discovered this artifact called the Silex and set off something called the Silex Blast, which was just, it's the equivalent of a nuke. So like,
right, like, yeah.
Mishra at some point had set this off, destroyed himself in the explosion, and destroyed like, you know, tens of thousands of people in the process as well. It caused like tidal waves and like all sorts of terrible things.
I like how 7 years and 30,000 beers later, I still kind of remember what you're talking about.
Yeah, I really liked the way that the person emoted. She, in surprise, she put her hands on her hips. What did she say?
Exacerbated hands.
Exasperation.
I want to start doing that more often.
That was a perfect like humph sort of move, yeah. Right?
Okay.
What fight? The Karns were defeated centuries ago, silly head.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, but I don't hit the hands on the hips enough. And by the way, if you ever want to do one of those funnier than just hands on the hips, the higher up you yeah. go with the hands, the
it's
sillier.
North to comedy.
Yeah. If you go nipple height, it's really.
I feel more Midwest the higher up I go. It's a very like, don't you know, pose.
Yeah. It's like that. Hold your sack of potatoes up here, kind of thing.
Yeah. Got all the groceries.
For the audio listeners at home, we're all doing it right now.
Of course.
They're doing it on the bus.
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
So Karn's in the caves. He's working to uncover how to activate this thing because he thinks that he can use it against the Phyrexians, right? That excavator, which he had just fixed, cracks through a cave wall into a hidden workshop. This ancient workshop full of Thran artifacts, ancient diagrams, and there's some diagrams which depict the Silex itself. So he's like, damn, this is a breakthrough, literally and figuratively. he realizes like, oh, this workshop might gain more clues to the Silex's power as well, right? I love this call out. The books in the workshop are so old that just Karn speaking aloud causes some of them to disintegrate, which is like, yeah, good luck opening one, man.
That's cool. Yeah. That is a great detail, but that's very much like the it is kind of the cliche of like the second you touch something it just disintegrates, right? And that's
I was thinking about it too. It's like, okay, this place is underground. Presumably, like, he is the only door in is the one he just made. Is there a skeleton, like, in a wooden chair, like, at a desk somewhere?
Yeah,
like,
with a broken pickaxe, like,
exactly. Like, who used to use this place, man? Oh, wow.
I think it's, like, probably a long time since this happened. I don't know. I honestly don't remember, like, when Karn comes in the story of the Brothers War either. Like, if he came.
Yeah.
Before the Silex Blast, after the Silex Blast, was he there for it? I don't know.
I'm running a test. I actually have some of our Borderlands episode on paper inside of a chair in my apartment.
Oh yeah.
And whenever I touch it and it disintegrates, we'll know that's at least how long it's been.
Gotcha.
I'd like to think, War Boys canon, that Karn's words, the words he spoke aloud to disintegrate some of the tomes, were just like Hachi Machi, the least considered epic thing on the planet.
I mean, yeah, he does make like a point before he steps into the workshop, which is like a nice touch from the writer, where he says like, "Oh, I got to stop talking to myself so much."
Yeah,
like, okay. And then like later on, he's talking to himself, and like a bad thing happens as a result of it. I was like, "Oh, that's a nice little touch." So Karn, you know, gathers up the stuff that he can that doesn't disintegrate, the diagrams that he can salvage, and he returns to check on his Silex. This mysterious device made of an unfamiliar copper-like metal. It's kind of in his tent at like his base of operations in a chest that only he can open.
Can he interact with it? Because he can control metal. Is the Silex like uncontrollable, spooky metal that he can't really interact with? Okay, so that's why he's obsessed with it. It's the only animal on the farm he hasn't been able to feed oats to, sort of.
Exactly. Thing. Anytime he touches it, he gets like this weird sensation. Like he's unable to like build things to like replicate it or really like pierce through the metal, I guess.
Okay.
Cool. And he just like he doesn't know the origin. He doesn't believe that Mishra created it, that it was even created by the Thran. He's like, he says at some point, he's like, this came from somewhere else or something else. So he believes it's aliens. He's got the tinfoil hat back on, I guess.
Right, yeah, of course.
In his tent at his little base of operations, Karn's reflecting on what needs to be done over a stack of unanswered letters from Joyra. I only mentioned that it will come into play later on. He's read these letters. He hasn't answered them.
Okay.
But he's got all these letters. He decides not to involve Joyra or any other planeswalkers in his quest just yet, fearing that if he involved them, they would only fall to harm, the same affliction that had once been killing Venser before he sacrificed himself to restore Karn. Then, at some point, another excavator engine dies. So he's like, okay, cool. Fix one. You fix one excavator engine, you fixed a million. He goes to investigate, and what should he find but an oily black substance where the machine had been digging and where it had cut into the wall. He probes, using his ability to detect metals, but finds instead that this oil is strangely organic. Karn realizes that the Phyrexians are indeed present on Dominaria and must be stopped at all costs. This is glistening oil. So this is the oil that kind of powers Phyrexian machines and what also turns humans into machines, essentially. It's
I was going to say, they can kind of use it to, they use it to mutate things, mutate themselves, and like they can just take over a planet by what, like seeding it with glistening oil, which will then disrupt life around it, right?
Just like it's the idea of like, oh, just a drop and it'll like, you know, propagate like a bacteria, right? Like it'll just grow and like consume all its neighbors and continue.
It's like
to
the
grow.
Black sludge too, from like Alien Covenant that we had talked about a long time ago, that like they create the aliens with. It's just like a drop of it can like mutate somebody.
Exactly.
Evil goo.
Yeah, precisely. So I have another quote for you guys. He could try to excavate the workshop. He could dig out the passage and return to his base camp. He could reach out to the others, but seeking help took time and Karn knew put others at risk. If he had learned anything during his long life, it was this. A single moment of inattention, of neglect, could leave an entire plane vulnerable to the Phyrexians. The Phyrexians were contained within the caves for now, and he with them. Good. He would not let Dominaria fall like Mirrodin once fell. He'd stop the Phyrexians. If he could not do that, he would obtain proof enough that he could recruit reinforcements. Proof enough that Joira and his fellow planeswalkers would believe him. Karn, Joira would say, you were right all along. I was reading that. Thank you guys for not interrupting my quote so far, by the way. But I was reading that and couldn't help but think about a single moment of inattention, of neglect, and thinking of Jamie's lost WoW hardcore character. Which I guess, listen to our bonus content if you want to hear Jamie's real gripes about it. But.
Rip to UNICEF, made it to 46, which is basically one. Halfway, and had a mount, had almost 100 gold, and it's all gone. But yeah, anyways, I'm still demoralizing. yeah, warrior demoralizing shouted me right now because I'm just feeling real bad about it. But anyways,
I like the idea of Karn talking to himself after discovering the oil. Like one, I hope, because the magic writing like sticks with me for like almost a decade now at this point, right? We've been doing this show, like this thing that I have never played and have only contact through you with. I like the writing is so good that it sticks with me that long. I really hope they don't do a like Galadriel in Rings of Power with Karn here, where he's like, no, guys, I'm right. I have proof down the hallway. And then no one's like, no, man. You're crazy. There's no bad guys coming at all. Like this isn't a setup for that. Because so far, the writing in Magic has been great, and that is a exhausting cliche.
I haven't seen Rings of Power. I'm not sure exactly what you mean, but he did just think to himself, like, he's going to do this. He's going to do this solo. He's going to either stop the Phyrexians on his own, or he's going to get enough proof that they're there that other people will finally fucking believe him.
Basically. Well, that's it. Like, the getting proof of the thing being there is, like, the setup for that show as well. And it is a tiresome cliche. It's like, the protagonist is the only person who knows, but, like, literally no one on Earth believes anything they say for some reason, but only in this instance. I also like the idea he's, like, still talking to himself. There's just books disintegrating all around him. He's just like, oh, she's just going to be like, wow, Karn, you were so right. You're not here. That's what she's going to say. I'm so right.
So Karn follows this tunnel. Basically the excavator like broke into a tunnel wall where like is an organic tunnel, and that's where the glistening oil comes from. He quickly encounters two human acolytes who are serving the Phyrexians pretty clearly. They have like all, you know, one of them has like a metal jaw, and he just like twists it so that she can't scream or whatever, you know. He subdues them due to his superior strength, but he does not kill them because he's got, you know, the Batman weakness, I guess. He silences the acolytes, continues his mission. He's determined to confront, you know, the leader of the Phyrexians here and put an end to their plans. So I have another quote. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Before we go to the quote, what's the Batman weakness? You don't kill?
Don't kill.
Okay.
That's like, it's always like, damn, if you just killed the Joker, dude, you'd probably fucking save a lot of fucking.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, yeah.
Honestly.
Just use a gun, Batman.
Just once, honestly.
Batman can control guns with his mind, is what I'm understanding.
Only back guns. So, I have another quote for you guys. I'll post you two images of characters whom we'll meet during this quote. The tunnel opened into a vast cavern, which echoed with the cacophony of human misery. On the other side of the crevasse was the Phyrexian staging ground, located on a broad, flat area of the cavern floor. Ant-like workers scrambled across the rope bridges strung over the crevasse, ferrying meaty gobs, bloody cables, and chunks of flesh over to humans being compliated on surgical tables. On the opposite wall of the cavern, a Phyrexian portal ship cut through the darkness like an immense scythe. Coils hung from this structure. The twitching loop's membranous purple gleam reminded Karn of intestines. Sheoldred hung suspended in this morass. She was still. Tubes fed reddish and milky substances into her black segmented body. The mandibles that extended down from her thorax lay open, relaxed. Her humanoid torso, welded to the thorax's top, lay nested in a thick network of writhing inky lines. A horned mask obscured her face. Beneath her, worshippers clung together and raised their voices in an ecstatic paean. The defunct Phyrexian portal ship and Sheoldred's sleeping form dominated the cavern. Acolytes in the gray robes of the Society of Mishra attended surgical machines that converted struggling people into Phyrexian abominations. Complicated monstrosities dotted the cavern's floor like grotesque artworks, skittering on too many limbs. More acolytes stacked weapons beside a Phyrexian skyship. Teams of splicers scaled a dragon engine to repair it, so small that their welding torches seemed like white stars against the engine's metal skeleton. He'd found the staging ground of the Phyrexian invasion.
Okay. Wow. Okay, I thought he was like looking for clues. I didn't realize he was about to stumble on the fucking Pater, Indiana baby. Jones like fucking Kali Ma situation down yeah. there. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's
I
exactly
just need
what
proof that there's a Temple of Doom. Oh, here it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This art, and I know we don't want to get too deep in the weeds here. This doctor lady with the afro is very cool, but god damn it, are the Phyrexians neat.
Yeah, just the Phyrexians
this
are very
giant
very cool.
woman's torso hanging from the ceiling held up by black tubes is just like
yeah.
fuck. So
it's like horns for eyes. And
yeah.
All sorts of cool. I love the Phyrexians.
Just got that touch of like, again, Alien, that touch of H.R. Giger without being like, it's still original enough. You can see like the one of the ingredients in the recipe of the whole thing, right?
Exactly. Totally cool. Art is by Igor Kirilluk.
Yeah. The signature thing on all these pictures looks like a butt plug, though.
What?
The signature thing on all these pictures looks like a butt plug.
Next to Igor's name. Instead of the little
arrow.
Sure.
Oh.
Yeah, it does.
It's like a yin and yang butt plug. You know, there's
I think it might be like
the set
icon or something. I don't know.
Kind of looks like a fish.
Hey, it's a, you know, some people see the butt plug half full. Some people see the butt plug half empty.
when really the butt is full the whole time.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
The realist knows. Yeah. That the butt is full all along.
So amid this nightmarish tableau, a lone figure tends to children, a young woman donning the distinctive cloak of the Talarian Academy, Karn's alma mater. Karn notices a red dot from a mechanical eye that she possesses. She is deeply engrossed in her work, sorting through gruesome organic materials to support and repair children. So the woman that the red-eyed woman with the afro, she is like repairing children whenever Karn arrives.
Oh, okay.
Karn observes a disturbing process where the young woman is essentially mining these like intense monstrosities in the chamber for like fleshy bits to restore children's damaged biological components.
So it's just like building Legos out of like meat mash, you know? It's just yeah. like it's so gross. It's like, oh yeah, this would all fit here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like she's dressing a deer, basically, but like instead of removing the organs, she's taking out like bags of Lego that are inside.
Yeah. or yeah, she's killing a deer and then putting all the deer livers into a big pile. The one other thing to take note of in that in the quote I just read you guys is they mentioned the Society of Mishra, which is kind of this like society which has presumably been allowed to continue in Dominaria. Maybe
since
not like
there's war, right?
It's like maybe not like it's like an open, but it's must have always been a criminal faction at the very least. I would assume. Right. I didn't look into them at all, but they're openly like working with the Phyrexians. It seems like the Society of Mishra. Despite the urgency to alert the other planeswalkers, Karn realizes that he cannot leave this station intact. He's like I should go back and tell people, but like they're doing too much here. Like it's going to take too long. I don't want any of these monstrosities to escape because there are like Phyrexian monstrosities kind of like running around. He resolves to destroy the Phyrexian before they can mount a defense. He's like, I'm going to hit him with a surprise. You know, he raises his hand, visualizing the creation of a gun. it's a gun that's actually a bomb. So he literally just like imagines an incendiary device from scratch and just like brings the metal together to create a bomb.
Does he like pull it out of the walls or just like he's just a magic answer basically?
It wasn't clear.
Okay. Yeah. He's magic. It doesn't matter.
Either. Yeah. Whatever.
He always pulls it from under his cape. It's always there.
He reaches behind Shieldred's ear and pulls out a bomb.
Yeah. from behind her pile of ears.
Oh, yes.
She just has a pile of ears on the ground.
like reaching behind the pile of gore and ears, just like, oh, a nickel.
The doctor's just got like a hand mirror, is like holding one ear up to Shieldred. Like, you like this one? No? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, like a barber.
I like whenever he goes to like grab the bomb from one of the 12 ears, I like him like flipping through it like a dossier, like,
the ear that's got the bomb in it. Oh, God.
Right behind the seventh ear here. Kaboom.
So he just assembles this device and he's like, I'm gonna blow this Phyrexian queen up, no problem, right? Just then, a sudden shrill klaxon blares through the cavern, disrupting the silence. Turns out, should have killed them, right? So chaos erupts and the cavernous acolytes hurriedly load weapons onto Phyrexian skyships. Surgeons transport their bloodied operating tables onto the vessels, and Phyrexian agents evacuate, abandoning the staging ground. So this Flaxen is like, hey, wheels up. We've been found out, like, everybody out.
Yeah.
Complicated Phyrexian monstrosities twitch to life, their metallic fibers extending from their bodies. In the midst of this turmoil, a red beam targets Carter's chest and a bolt of energy whizzes overhead as he drops to the ground. So he gets the classic like sniper dot on his in the center of his chest. The Talarian woman, now equipped with a glaive and her mechanical eye, which can apparently shoot laser blasts, sets herself before Karn in his way. Completed Phyrexian creatures converge on Karn, and the Talarian woman smiles confidently, placing her hand on Shieldred's immobile claw. So Shieldred's inert during all this. Like, she can't move. She's vulnerable. And like, it's described very well, very evocatively, I'd say, in the text, where it's like this woman like places her hand as if like she's a doctor, and you know, like the like Shieldred's like on her in the hospital bed and just like needs a little bit of comfort. It's just like very like very jarring, I guess.
It's like bedside manner next to all these monstrosities and a fight about to happen. It's
exactly
like,
yeah, do nothing but harm.
It's just like a sword through a snake.
As Shakespeare said, physician, compliate thyself, right? So Karn's like being faced by all these Phyrexian monstrosities. Ooh, zucchini loaf. He's being confronted by all these Phyrexian monstrosities. There's this very confident looking woman, but she doesn't know. He's got a trick up his sleeve, a bomb. He just moments ago willed into existence.
He's got a trick behind her ear, a bomb.
So a narrow stone bridge provides the nearest access to Shieldred, but it's blocked by 12 worshippers and the Talarian woman. He's got to fight his way through. Sorry, I really did take a big bite of
break if you wanted, man.
I said it out loud. I was like, they're going to vamp. You guys are stones. I know, this is a very tense moment. I get it.
Yeah. I have stone and I'm very committed right now. Come on.
I was eating popcorn on the mic the last time, being like, ha ha, Ethan's not here to stop me. But it turns out he wouldn't have, because he's doing the same thing.
We're in our Cumtown era of just eating on mic every episode now.
I wouldn't stop you on your own episode.
Okay.
I'm serving you on my episode, don't get me wrong.
Yep.
So Karn summons his resolve, charges down the bridge towards Shieldred's location. Shieldred's worshippers cease their chant, confront him, launching themselves at Karn in a desperate attempt to stop his advance. Pretty strong, though. Made out of metal.
I have a question just about the actual setup here. Not to go from vamping to off-topic or, like, whatever.
You could have done this when I was eating zucchini bread. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, zucchini bread does sound good. they're underground in this cavern. They have a portal underground that they're coming through, right? There's, like, the Phyrexian transport portal you had mentioned or something like that.
So there's like a transport ship, I guess.
That's
They're not planeswalking portals. They're like local portals. So they're like portals to other places in Dominaria.
Like a complicated hallway, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you need to have a portal to a restroom on monstrosity build site is just part of the regulation.
Yeah, part of the union. Yeah.
You guys might remember from like a long, long time ago, and Karn was pretty central to this one. But like it used to be that kind of anybody could planeswalk. And then kind of the rules were sort of rewritten so that you needed a planeswalker spark to planeswalk, essentially.
Okay. I can't say
that's canon, that is in the canon, I guess, that like you need one. So like these ships and things like that would never be able to planeswalk without like an active planeswalker there, essentially.
Right. Okay.
So Karn swiftly deals with the worshippers. He kind of it's described. He just pushes them off the bridge. Dummies. then the next like six like run up to him. They all got these piercing weapons, and he's like, "I'm made out of metal, you dummies." Yeah.
It's the Indiana Jones, the guy with the sword, like does all the big moves.
Him,
pulls out the gun and just blasts him.
He reaches Shieldred. She begins to stir from her slumber. Her segmented lips twitch into an arachnid like quality, and her humanoid torso displays crude organic materials grafted onto it by the Talarian woman's efforts. So I have a longer quote for you guys here. We're going to get the woman's name. Get it out of the way right now. This is post COVID-19. They did name this villain Rona. Just saying.
Okay. My Sharona.
He strode to Shieldred. She hung limp within her cradle, but no longer quiescent. Her segmented limbs twitched like an arachnid's as she emerged into consciousness. Her human torso atop her thorax shivered. Her long fingers reached downward to the young woman in the Talarian robes. But she did not seem aware. Not yet. Karn, the Talarian spoke with contempt. I've heard a lot about you. How so? Her gaze flicked to Shieldred's inert form, then returned to him. You aren't as impressive as I've been led to believe. Karn walked towards Shieldred, the incendiary device in his hand. Who are you? Karn asked the Talarian. Why would you bring this here? Rona. And this, she gestured to Shieldred, is Dominaria's salvation. Mm. Rona positioned herself between Karn and Shieldred. Glaive held easy and at an angle in her palms. Rona's flash eye narrowed while her mechanical socket focused its laser onto Karn's torso. She flexed her hands around her glaive. Its blade brightened, crackling with blue electricity. She smiled. I do not wish to fight you, Karn told her. Too bad. The electricity danced across his body, sparking. Karn grimaced at the pain, but pushed through it, walking toward her as more waves rippled from its blade, pouring over him. Karn paused, dazed, and tried to shake off the agony as Rona continued to attack. She swung the glaive down, lodging it into his shoulder. Karn twisted, pulling it from her grip, and removed it from his body. He threw it aside.
That's a fucking badass.
While he was occupied, Rona unsheathed the dagger and jammed it into one of his abdominal seams. She dug it between the plates that allowed him to flex, as if searching for organs. Karn winced. Karn gripped her head in one of his hands. He pressed his thumb into the mechanical eye and shattered the ray's lens. Rona shrieked and kicked. Karn tossed her into the wall. Bones crunched. Oh. She slammed into it, then fell to the ground. She curled her hands around her head, her leg at an angle unnatural to human beings. Oil and blood oozed from the broken mechanical parts in her eye socket. She glared up at him from between her fingers, her lips drawn into a rictus. Why don't you kill me? Rona taunted. Finish me off. I am not a weapon. So, he's not a weapon, but he would be a good one if he wanted to.
I thought he was like, oh man, those two people I didn't kill earlier kind of like had me made. I'm just going to kill the bitch this time, like crushing her skull. He's like, well, I'm not making that mistake twice.
Just crush your robot eye. Didn't crush the skull.
Like throwing and smashing all her bones against a cave wall. I was just like, oh yeah, this she's so dead. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's also the classic like Batman writer's corner that you get into. It's like, oh yeah, you left them like strung up in like a back alley for like God knows how long when somebody would find him just so he could get like killed by like another mugger because it's Gotham or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't kill him though. So Karn kind of like steps up to Shieldred. He's holding the incendiary device with the intent to destroy her and end the Phyrexian threat on Dominaria. The quote continues. At his touch, Shieldred stirred. Her helmeted head craned down towards him. He could feel her with the same senses he used to determine the elemental composition of a compound. Her inorganic components stretched out before him like the pages in a book. Her biological parts lay like dark tumors nestled within the metal's luminescent glory. He could read her thoughts, some of them. Welcome, father, Shieldred whispered into his mind, one mechanical being to another. What plans I have for you. Karn recoiled from her slimy whisper, stepping back, and he knew what she had done. Phyrexian sleeper agents lurked in every land in Dominaria. These unknowing spies peppered throughout every government, throughout the military, throughout common people. He saw a brewer dumping hops into a vat, a spy. He saw a scribe sitting at a desk, her hand poised over a letter. He saw an adolescent playing chase with his cousins, pretending to be a monster when he was one. Phyrexian armature ready to explode from his back. Phyrexian agents were people's lovers, comrades, colleagues at work. They were everywhere. They could be anyone. Welcome, her whisper echoed within him. Welcome.
This is a very good conspiracy, because his whole, they'll believe me when I prove it, is like the root of the Great Awakening. Like, it's the conspiracy thing, right? But this one's fucking crazy, yeah. I like the idea that it's just like, all the plants in like normal society, it's just like, no. Like, all these people have the same, like, hideous mechanical eye, but they've just like, been blending in this whole time somehow. Like, playing with your cousin, he's 16 years old, you know, roughhousing a bit. It's like, but there's my cousin with the mechanical eye.
Yeah. Do you guys notice, like, we go to the gym every day. Did you notice that Ralph just started sweating black?
It's a new Gatorade flavor. The Nuln oil is like sweating out of his pores. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, didn't think you could hear us. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Airports have non-metal detectors now and stuff. Yeah. Like, just because they're going off every time.
Phyrexian TSA. It's like, sir, do you have any meat in your suitcase? He's like, oh shit, I did forget to take that out.
It's just like a perfectly packaged ground beef when you open it.
Yelled through the x-ray, like the styrofoam tray comes up on the x-ray thing. It's like, sure, I'm going to have to ask you to come to the side here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, take your belt off.
Yeah. you put the body to a pan, and if anything sizzles, then you're in trouble, you know?
Yeah. So Karn, you know, getting the welcome from her and being called dad is like, well, that's a bit much. So jams a bomb into her body, determined to end her threat. But just as he gets it into her thorax, he becomes paralyzed. All his joints is locked and he could not move. From his periphery, here's, two strikes, I guess. He sees Rona, still alive, dragging her shattered body towards a pile of Phyrexian machines one she had created herself. And she's there, she's got magic on him, and he's paralyzed. As Karn struggles, Rona speaks. "Your mistake," she says, "was not killing me when you had the chance. We have expected your coming, Karn. We have prepared."
Yes, that was my mistake.
She might be right this time. God, yeah. I wish I was a weapon sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, like, a hammer is not a weapon.
It's a tool.
It's a tool. But every once in a while, like, if you had a, like, I feel like a tool could be a weapon too, yeah. Man. And doesn't he look like a tool right now?
Be a tool. Enough bullets, you could cut through a piece of wood, no problem.
Gotta shave a quarter, like, I shave a quarter inch off the end of a 2x4, and just blab, like.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this back in the day. Sorry, guys, it's been a million years for me too, but like, Karn was created as a weapon by Urza, and like, he really came to loathe that. And then he like went to school and he has this like whole arc where he's like, oh, you know, like, I just want to be like a real person and not just be a weapon. So that's where this comes from. That said, like, it's like Batman dealing with the Joker, Karn dealing with the Phyrexians, just fucking kill these people. Like, they just need to die because they're trying to destroy all life, you know? So Karn fights so hard to move against this paralysis that he ends up feeling the metal of his body bend. It seems like it's the joints that are paralyzed, and he like forces the engine so much that he feels like the very metal of his body start to like shear and break. Rona reveals that the Phyrexians are evacuating their forces from the compromised staging area and retreating to secondary bases across Dominaria, rendering Karn's efforts to thwart them futile. I have another quote for you guys. I didn't want to keep doing quotes, but they're just too cool. This one's a bit body horror-esque, but Rona sorted through the heaped parts she'd been using to repair Shieldred. She lifted up a node, smiled, and set it aside. With a grimace, she dug her fingers into her damaged eye socket and yanked out the ruined node, exposing raw tissue and a piece of gleaming skull near her eyebrow. A gout of clear liquid spurted out. She clicked the new node into place. Roars boomed through the cavern. Rock sifted down, pinging against Karn's body. "That," Rona said, "was the sound of our ships evacuating our forces from this staging area, which has been compromised, and retreating to a secondary staging area. We have many bases across Dominaria. You will not find them all." Rona drove her glaive into her leg. She grunted, slicing through her clothing and her flesh. Her eyes teared, even the eye she'd replaced dripping. Panting, she bared her muscle and her broken bone to the cavern's air.
Why would you make a mechanical eye that can cry?
I think it's more like the duct is probably still there, right?
Okay. Self-lubricating.
And also, it's called poetry, Peter.
And there was some clear, like, clear liquid in there already, too. It might just still be dripping because she just shoved an eye in and it was already gushing clear.
Exactly.
Whatever eye is still damp, yeah.
Yeah.
Like cerebral fluid? Bone
or
marrow?
Like null oil or whatever.
Yeah.
Or glistening oil, excuse me. I keep saying null oil. That's paint. It's my
I was
bad.
Like, what are you talking about? you said it with such conviction, though. I wasn't going to question.
It's a Warhammer paint.
So she continues to speak. She's taunting Karn with the inevitability of Dominaria's transformation. Karn, still arm deep in Shieldred's torso, could feel clicking vibrate along his body. Shieldred split apart, dividing herself up in pieces. Her segments broke away, each piece sprouting a dozen Viridian segmented legs. The swarm poured over Karn, using him as a bridge to the floor. The spider-like creatures ran along Karn's arms, down his back and torso, the backs of his knees, his calves. The tink, tink, tink of their metallic claws reverberated through him. A tarantula-sized piece sprang free from the cables onto Karn's face. It clung to his head, twitching, a heart-like nugget of flesh grafted into the center of its modified thorax. It crawled over his head. He could feel its wet body slither down his back. It dropped to the floor and scampered away. "I may not be able to stop you," Urza's creation said, "but I can prevent you from stopping us." So, she's chill. She kind of discloses the fact that she's like, you know, Phyrexian transformation is a path to perfection, baby. I'm one of those people that was like, hey, life was shittier before, but this is great. I get to be a part of something, right?
And she's also rebuilding herself, like, and making fun of the same, like, hacking a leg off to replace it with something else, right?
Exactly. She references the Mirrens, like the refugees who had come to Mirrodin, Karn's world, and who were turned into Phyrexians eventually. And it's like, see, they had it great. They got to become Phyrexians, right? This entire time, Karn is slowly fighting his, her entire time she's monologuing. She has the same villain weaknesses that Batman villains have, or you know, a lot of villains in media
syndrome.
Have. She's monologuing. He's fighting his paralysis. He feels the magic wearing thin. He's slowly overcoming the force holding him in place. I got one more quote for you guys before we'll go to break. Rona flipped a switch on the wall. There was a small grating noise, then a series of booms overhead. The roar as the cavern fell engulfed him. Tons of rock poured onto him. A boulder rolled off the cavern's wall, then bounced into his chest. It tossed him onto his back. He stared up at the collapsing cavern, still paralyzed by Rona's device. Rocks sheeted down. Fist-sized pieces hammered into his body. Smaller pebbles thunked and plinked against him, rolling and filling in the gaps. His vision turned gray from dust, then blackened out as the stone obscured all light. The rock weighed upon him. He could feel Rona's spell ease. He could move, or at least beneath all this stone, he could attempt to move, to twitch a finger, for whatever good it did him. Not even he could lift this stone. Not even he could dig his way out from this cave-in. The crushing layer of rock was too heavy even for him to shift. Karn reached for the spark that allowed him to planeswalk. It burned within him, hot and bright, such a perpetual companion that he had ceased to notice it. If he could just focus and... It didn't work. Nothing happened. Karn reached out with his special senses through his fingertips and analyzed the surrounding inorganic materials. Olivine, granite, quartz, mica, ordinary stone, but with all the ancient interplanar and Phyrexian technology providing a low-grade interference, he could not planeswalk away. He was trapped. Only he knew that Shieldred had come to Dominaria, and he could warn no one. More on that after the break.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Time trickled away more slowly than the grains of sand settling between the rocks. The fine particles sifted into Karn's joints. He didn't know how long he had lain there, pinned in the dark. Was it days or weeks that had passed? What if months had flown away, like a small and startled bird? What if it was longer? Years, decades, eons? No, he could not think of it. No one would miss him. No one would know. No one knew where he had gone. He should have told someone. He should have at least told Joyra or Jaya. If he had told them, they would have known where to search and either freed him or seen the Phyrexians themselves. What if the Phyrexians were the ones to find him? Would it be worse if no one found him? He might wait alone forever in the darkness, in the silence. Sand trickled down, a scrabbling noise, maybe claws grating on rough stone. A weight lifted away from his hand, exposing it to the chill air currents. He could move his fingers. Relief shot through him, a pang more powerful than the blind eternities. He stretched his fingers, marveling at the freedom of this small movement, the ability to make any movement. Something warm and soft touched his fingertips, organic, impenetrable to his senses. Not Phyrexian. Gentle, thoughtful. He was found. The warmth left his fingertips. Had his rescuer departed? The scratching quickened. Rocks grated, pebbles cascaded. Clunks as large rocks tossed away landed. The burden on him lightened. Karn strained. The material around him budged, shifting at the pressure of his enormous strength. Karn exercised the powerful mechanisms in his torso, pushing himself upright. Rocks poured away. He heaved himself up slowly. He wanted to take care not to hurt his rescuer with any stray stones. As his efforts increased, the scratching noise ended. Footfalls retreated as his rescuer stepped clear. Karn would have to trust that they had moved to a safe distance. Karn hauled himself to his feet. Stone poured off him, and he was free. The warm air caressed his body. He rolled his shoulders, reveling in their movement. The tumbling rock kicked up a gray haze. He shook the fine particles from his body and wiped clean his eyes. A Johnny stood in the tunnel, his fur a striking white in the torchlight.
Yay!
The pupil of his unscarred, pale blue-eyed glinted in the nocturnal hue of a nighttime predator. His shoulders had a proud set to them, like he was pleased he'd found Karn. He granted Karn a friendly, closed-lip smile.
So this is exactly how sleep apnea goes. Welcome back for the break. But you got to start with the fingers. Then you go to the hands. And then someone in the Discord said I've helped them with sleep paralysis. Yeah.
Okay.
So whenever you're...
This is the snoring lore episode, and Jamie's here to help you with your sleep apnea.
First thing you got to do is got to get all those rocks off your chest. Yeah. It's not helping anyone.
Yeah. Don't worry about the thing grabbing your hand. It might be a monster, but it might also be a friendly furry. Okay,
yeah, so exactly. If you ever have sleep paralysis and you are really nervous because you can't move anything, start with the fingertips, move to your hands, move to your arms, and eventually you can push yourself up in bed, and you'll feel all the joy that that our friend here just felt because you're still alive and you can move.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Obviously, because of the day we're recording. Hauling Karn out of the rubble, I was just like, the warmth on his hand was like a New York firefighter. He's like, you're gonna be okay, buddy. We're getting you out of the rubble.
It is Monday, September.
Yeah. Steve Buscemi. Yeah, like, hey man, you're gonna be okay. Or I also think it's just like a raccoon that was like digging through the rubble, and like the warm pad of the hands that he found was just like a raccoon searching through garbage. He'd been there for centuries.
I was thinking
I was still in bed for that whole part. So I was like, that softness, that's a titty. You're just laying with a lady there.
Nice, dude. Nice. Yep. I wonder what it feels like.
I've never felt one.
Welcome back. Perhaps you guys will remember from our Elspeth episodes that people were searching for Karn for like a long, long time.
There's some kind of the quest for Karn that we may have covered at some point.
Yeah, so the novel The Quest for Karn by Robert B. Wintermute was released in 2011. They looked for him for a long, long time. Eventually found him at the center of Mirrodin, as Peter alluded to earlier in this episode. And then it turns out he just went and got lost again. Freaking disappeared under a big old pile of rock for a while, you know?
Air tag on this motherfucker. You keep losing him.
So it's funny you mentioned, it's funny you say that, because maybe somebody did, huh? Maybe how else did they find him? I wonder.
He cut off his own arm and found someone in the desert after 174 hours or whatever. Yeah. Like James Franco did.
Yeah. I was imagining a disembodied Karn arm walking around like Thing from the Addams Family, that laying down and like trying to ASL directions to the person who found him.
pointing aggressively. Yeah.
Now Pete mimed the arm walking around like a spider. Like just a hand walking like Thing from the Addams Family. I was picturing kind of doing it like a worm, you know, like.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's how I would do that.
Yeah. No. I thought the guy was gonna move, not the arm. You guys. Are, You got me.
Back in the day. Okay, I'm getting the silly wave from Peter telling me to just continue on with the magic story. So back in the day, he'd eventually been found and rescued by Elspeth and the gang, and was saved by Venser's sacrifice. Now at the heart of a very old storyline in the magic universe, in the caves of Koilos, Karn finds himself trapped again for months. We find out that he was down there for months while the Phyrexians continued plotting and usurping and planting and manchuring and candidating. Being a robot and not needing food or water or air meant that Karn, all he could do was just lie helplessly, crush tons of stone, unable to planeswalk, while the Phyrexians were making moves in Dominaria. It's Ajani Goldmane who would come to his rescue, the Leonin planeswalker who had once traveled with Elspeth in search of Karn. He is also from Alara, from one of the shards of Alara. Don't remember which one. Don't at me. I called him a furry earlier. He's a cat person. They're quite tall. They're like 7 or 8 feet tall, I think, typically. Karn's taller. He's a big old golem, right?
Right.
He finds Karn. They had traveled with Elspeth in search of Karn originally, but he left the group before they found him, before they went to Mirrodin. So he wasn't there the first time they found him, but I guess his quest for Karn never really stopped, and here he is.
Cool.
So it turns out that the letters Joyra had been sending to Karn had tracking magic on them.
Oh.
So she's a fucking fed, I guess. I don't know.
That's true.
Oh, no.
Also, it's good that he doesn't recycle, right?
Yeah,
It's like, I'm going to one more breakthrough I'm going to go for. And then I got a bunch of letters to toss. And that's why he's here, right? But yeah, she is a Fed. Just like emailing him GPSs constantly. Yeah, just like,
emailing him air tags, exactly. Like. And you know, she had told Ajani that, and Ajani had gone to find him, had found the camp, and it had eventually found like the ruins and started digging, I guess.
And that like little tin that she sends to him, and just like it just on the cover of the tin just says accept cookies. He's like, ooh, I love cookies. And that's like cracking the whole time.
Just like little antenna that's like spinning on the top of his head, little satellite dish that's spinning on the top of his head at all times, just like buzzes for a moment and then continues on like business as usual. So Karn and Ajani decide to return where Karn's camp was months ago, as Karn wonders if the Silex is still there. When reaching his camp, Karn did not check the box, which once contained the Silex right away. Ajani was with him, and despite the fact that the Leonin had literally tunneled into a mountain to recover Karn's trapped form, the golem did not trust Ajani with the knowledge that he had the Silex. It's like,
so he has like a decoy shoebox that he keeps the Silex in, and he's just like, let me check the big safe on the wall. Oops, not in there. You go check somewhere else. And he goes like just like pulls it out between his mattresses. Like thank God for that.
Like almost exactly what happens. Like he doesn't even lead on that like he has it, and he's not saying like, oh, I'm gonna look for it somewhere. Like he's just like there's no mention of it. Nobody knows that he had the Silex.
Okay.
Maybe Joyra did. I didn't actually see mention, but Ajani definitely had no idea that he had it. And he literally like he walks around his camp. He's like, oh, is all my stuff still here? Oh yeah. Oh, my favorite plate. Oh yeah, it's still here. Oh, Rubik's Cube. Yeah, okay.
Hands strange box. Very high on his body. He's like,
yeah. A pile of catnip over there. Oh yeah, still here. Yeah, still here.
And he's like, strange box, strange lockbox that only I can open. That's under my desk. Pick it up. Yeah, I'm sure whatever's in there is still in there. And then he just puts it back under his desk. Basically, basically just like picks up the box and like senses the Silex in it, and then just like puts it back under the desk. Essentially, So he uses his metal detecting senses to determine if it was still there, while he explained to Ajani what he had seen. Before the two of them planeswalk away to try and warn the leaders of Dominaria, he brings the Silex with him. He goes back to get it later. I'm not sure.
Is he still carrying like the null oil? I keep fucking saying it. The glistening oil. Is he bringing it with him as evidence or anything? Okay.
No. So he brings no evidence, which Pete, if only you were there, because boy, are they not going to believe him.
Well, this is the whole fucking conspiracy thing. He's just like, wow, evidence that there's a conspiracy. What's he going to do? Just like barge into the police station, point at the secretary and be like, her, she's a Phyrexian. Like, get out of here. You're crazy.
So yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe you bring up a good point that they like it was months since they left. Maybe they like up and left with like all the evidence of the fact that they had once contaminated it. Because now that you say it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good point. I don't know why he didn't just say, let's just go there.
They used the big magnet off of Nico Bolas's dead head to just pick up all the metal and leave. Which is a joke from 5 years ago or six years ago now.
Yeah,
anyway. more modern than the.
Yeah, more modern than the Urza and Yawgmoth episodes, but still very dated.
Yes.
They're like, Karn's like, hey, we have to warn people. Johnny's like, hey, there's like a UN meeting going on right now. It wasn't a UN meeting. There was like peace talks being negotiated between like these two Dominarian countries, essentially.
Okay.
And
you cut off at the wrong part whenever you like, cut Dominaric country. You don't like the countries, man. Okay,
Dommy cunts, please. So Ajani and Karn crashed in negotiations, which featured the leaders of the countries of Keld and Benelish. We talked about Keld a little bit. Don't need to worry about it.
I know Benelish. It is Luxembourg, Belgium, and Netherlands, right?
Benelish and definition make them go super crazy.
Benelux, okay.
Benelux, yeah.
Yeah.
The bar in Montreal.
No, Benelux is the name for those three countries combined, silly.
Yeah, maybe.
It is. I've done reports on it.
Book reports?
Book report on a bar.
Okay, so we've got Keld and Benelux. As well as the Archmage Joda and his once apprentice turned planeswalker Jaya Ballard. So these are kind of the two countries, all the representatives, the leaders of the countries, and then there's these arbiters, Archmage Joda and his and this other Arbiter, this Planeswalker.
Is he a little green guy? Does he talk funny?
Yoda? No, I can send you. I do have a picture of Yoda.
He's just like a Yoda with a Spanish accent. I wish I could do a good Yoda with a Spanish accent.
Yeah, I was trying to think what that would sound like, because I could do like Spain Spanish. He's like, there is no try.
What would it be?
Madre puta di.
That's pretty good. Very good.
So Johnny and Karn show up. There's Spanish Yoda sitting there, brokering some peace talks. And they warn everyone of they're like, guys, stop the peace talks. There's a bigger issue than world peace going on. Okay, there's freaking Phyrexian monsters on Dominaria. Everyone's pretty stunned into silence. Like, they all remember.
Don't you cut me off, Spanish Yoda. I'm talking.
This is
celebrate. I must for Mayo de Cinco.
Everyone's stunned into silence. People remember the first Phyrexian invasion of Dominaria. So this is kind of like the resurgence, or the next arc of Phyrexians in the Magic storyline, where it took a long break to deal with the Gatewatch and Nicol Bolas and all that stuff. Yeah. But in the past, the Phyrexians had invaded Dominaria before, and I think that was like when they made the change that like things couldn't planeswalk unless they were a planeswalker, like in canon, was kind of as a direct result of that or something like that, but I don't remember, but everyone in Dominaria remembers the Phyrexians, even if they don't directly remember, like they've all heard stories or like read the history books. Right. So everyone's kind of stunned into silence. But it wouldn't be a good story if there wasn't some conservative in the room to loudly proclaim that climate change isn't real. Right. So that's Yoda, the Archmage.
Well, Karn didn't bring any climate into the conference as proof, right? He left all the climate behind in that cave that he had fucking mined into. Exactly. So it couldn't prove that anything had happened.
Takes a glass of glistening oil and like puts it in front of the Archmage. Like, well, would you drink that? This is coming out of my taps at home. So I posted a picture of the conservative tight lip there for you guys while I read you a quote from Sand in the Hourglass by Langley Hyde.
Sitting cross-legged and hovering above the ground is not how I imagined a conservative, actually.
With a bunch of like multicolored orbs behind him. Yeah. Very much.
He's
not
kind
of
petite. He's kind of petite. Yeah. It's like got like Ben Shapiro vibes, maybe.
Longer hair.
He's an Archmage. He's very old. He's kind of like, he doesn't age because he's such a powerful Archmage. He's not a Planeswalker, but
Magic doesn't care about your feelings.
I was going to say, he uses like magic to keep himself looking like Ben Shapiro. Like, I could just stay young forever, but this is a choice.
I'm using magic to put Ben Shapiro's face on porn. also called AI.
Yeah, look at this deep cuck.
So I have another quote for you guys from Sand in the Hourglass, the second story in the Dominaria United. I've walked this plane for millennia, Yoda said, and I've read the stories, examined the histories. I have visited the ruins. I tell you this not to boast, but so that you know I speak the truth. The Phyrexians cannot traverse the blind eternity. Shieldred has traveled between planes, Karn said. Only planeswalkers can do that now, Yoda pinch the bridge of his nose. If I recall, Karn, that is a reality you helped usher in. So again, I didn't look into what exactly it was, but they did like canonically change, like something happened in the universe to change the fact that now only planeswalkers can planeswalk. Right. And Yoda is kind of using, and Karn had some part in it, and now Yoda is saying, like, we did it. You did it, dude. You fixed it so that the Phyrexians can't do that. And Karn's being like, yeah, but it didn't work. Like, why don't you trust me? Like, yeah. Clearly something went wrong because they done did it. There was, however, a young guppy liberal named Sten, who did believe Karn and had indeed been warning of Phyrexian sleeper cells for some time. So I posted you guys a picture of Sten, who does look like a young guppy liberal.
He does. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, he looks like he's appropriating those clothes, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Yeah, he might be Latin.
That's Spanish Yoda. That's what he looks like now.
Yeah. It's three white guys on a podcast just evaluating the color of a guy's skin.
Yeah, dude.
It's our new theme song. I've been working on it.
Thanks.
Unfortunately, the young upstart is shushed, and Karn and Ajani are forced to leave the table without the support of the UN. So everyone's like, you know what? Archmage is right. They can't. Frick, he has complaints. Why, Karn, you're so silly? Yet is so scared. Yet is so spooked. Karn, don't you understand? You
climate
your
change
joke.
Is happening. Counterpoint, it isn't. But that guy's probably right, actually.
That's exactly right. Well, you got to understand, Karn, the implications of if climate change is real is really scary and probably hard to deal with. So let's say that it's not real.
Yeah, me and my friend around the room. Yeah, some glistening oil baron like turns his robot eye around into the proper eye. Yeah.
No, I say, I have been mining for oil only in the safest of caves. I have not no problem this.
maybe more than you know, huh? So Karn uses a scrying device he invented, which lets him imagine a person and conjure their image and their real world location data. So he's like a Fed's wet dream, I guess.
He is, yeah.
I don't know. He just dreams this device up. Like, you know, I can make a bomb, I can make a gun, I can make, you know, the TSA.
I can see you when you're
the NSA, yeah. Sorry.
The NSA, I see you, yeah. When you're sleeping, I see you when you're awake, when you've been bad or good. So don't make metal monstrosities, for goodness sake.
Yeah. Metal gem. Mm-hmm. So with meticulous precision, Karn conjures an ethereal image of Joyra. He sees kind of where she is, this distant place called Shiv, where she's tending to her arcane craft. However, a stark realization strikes him. While he wanted to use this, you know, this scrying orb to find the Phyrexians, he realizes the ominous figure of Shieldred remains elusive, shrouded in a sinister veil of protection woven by the Phyrexians, further emphasizing the gravity of their threat. So, like, they've accounted for this. They're like, yeah, this guy can dream up any government body's technology. So he's gonna dream up the NSA's technology, and they're gonna wiretap our phones. So we got to cut all the phone lines out of the walls.
Right. Yeah, defrost all the meat in your freezer, and yeah, exactly. It's just like, yeah. Got it.
Just classic. Take another bump of Phyrex, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like, I'm gonna scry on Shieldred, and then we'll know where they are. But it also, like, he doesn't like it's described when he like scries on Joyra, he doesn't picture her face or her like physical appearance. He kind of like knows her essence, and he knows her super intimately, so that's how he can do it. Which, like, obviously he doesn't have that connection with Shieldred either.
Yeah,
I don't know how.
Torso neck down. It's like, Karn, her tits aren't that big. He's like,
so he is doing this with a Johnny in the room, so you're not wrong.
I was thinking it's like her essence. It was just gonna be her like brony, like her just in like a pony little dance there. It'd be very comfortable. Yeah, her true essence. Yeah, is the brony, of course. Yeah.
Looks over his shoulder, sees like the scry coming from the other room. Like, oh God, what are you doing? So they decide they're like, okay, we're gonna go. I missed it. So they go back to the negotiations. They go back and forth a few times, but they go back to the negotiation room. They're like, Johnny and Karn talk. They're like, okay, we can't scry. We need to try and convince everybody once more. If we can get Jaya alone, because she's reasonable and we're friends, and she's a planeswalker and she can see the big picture outside of just like the, because the people there are very worried. Like, Joda is saying, like, hey, even if they are real, like, I don't really believe that they are, but whatever, Karn, if they are real, like, let's deal with the immediate threat, which is like pending war or like ongoing war between these two nations where people are like actively dying, rather than your boogeyman that you've shown up with. Like, we have to broker this peace first and like make sure that both sides are like feeling good about it before we deal with your thing. Okay.
Right. Okay.
But they're like, okay, if we can get Jaya, she can see the big picture. So like, let's go back, hang out. And then when we have a moment alone, we can talk to her. So they're back in the negotiation room. And as they're standing there, Teferi, another planeswalker, appears on the scene. So he just like planeswalks from somewhere else, bringing bad news from Kamigawa, dudes. I was just there.
Yeah, I was going to say, a very familiar name. Like, I recognize that one.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the one who called Karn Artie Shovelhead. He's the one who gave him that name. Right. So they went to the Tolarian Academy together. Very powerful planeswalker. He created, you guys will kind of, he like protected the Tolarian Academy in like a bubble for like a good while.
Oh, yeah.
That guy. So he's like, guys, you won't believe this. I just got back from Kamigawa. There's fucking Phyrexians there, and they can totally planeswalk you guys. Everyone believes to instantly. Karn has a real what the fuck moment. Yeah. as everyone jumps to immediate action in response to his second end account. There is I don't know if it's here or like in a little bit, but there's this like great line, which I didn't include the quote, but it's like they had just finished like brokering the peace. And like one of the representatives is like, I want to talk about this like mutual defense pact that we signed or whatever. Now that like Phyrexians are invading, they're like, we don't want to come protect you guys if the Phyrexians attack.
Oh my God.
Because we need our own people. They're like instantly like trying to back out of the contract. I thought it was funny. Teferi, like Karn and Ajani are like, oh, okay, like that's crazy. It's good that everyone believes us now. Karn's still like, that's like kind of fucked up, guys, that you don't believe me just because I'm a golem. So they're leading Teferi out, and Teferi lets Karn and Ajani know, not the entire group, that Tamio had been captured and completed by the Phyrexians, which is how we ended our Kamigawa arc. Was Tamio, the planeswalker with the rabbit ears, had been captured by the Phyrexians and turned into a Phyrexian, which had hitherto never been done. Like they'd never completed a planeswalker before. That's, you know, They were using Tezzeret to planeswalk. That's how they got the three to the
planes. Yeah, he was like their chaperone, right? He wouldn't actually, yeah.
But now that they have a complicated planeswalker, they can probably just do it themselves. They probably don't need the puppet anymore.
Right.
Decisively, Karn's like, oh, I gotta go to my room. runs to his room, grabs the Silex.
Joyride's there with her big tits, just like... He's like, no, out of the way.
Walks right through. She's still just a vision. Like, he forgot the porn playing on his hotel room TV. So he runs to his room or his tent. I don't actually remember which. He grabs the Silex and he's like, where can I take it? He's like, Joyer's workshop. It'll be safe. You know, no one will find it there. He planeswalks. He like has to go far enough away so that Ajani and Teferi won't detect him planeswalking. So he runs for a bit and then he planeswalks to her workshop and then heads into her workshop, you know, quick beanie, no problem. Super not problematic when like, you know, it's this a robot golem with one person he's ever loved probably is just like quickly beanieing into her place.
Right now he's like, he had the powers of the NSA. Now he's got the powers of the FBI finding evidence on other people. Yeah.
He places it in a closet behind the dustiest pipes he can find.
Okay. No one on his way, these pipes.
Ugh. Yeah. On his way out, it's like first thing in the morning. So like just before dawn, he runs into Sten, the guppy liberal mage I sent you guys. And Sten is like the one person who's like, yeah, you know, like you're right. Sten is also from like another country that wasn't the two that were actively at war. He was kind of just like another member of the UN. And he's like, hey, me and my king, like we back you. We believe the Phyrexians are the real biggest threat or whatever. I haven't actually read the rest of the story just yet. While I go through it, I'm like, this guy's fucking sus as hell, man. This guy's freaking sussy back. Yeah, he's like, yeah, we got your back.
No magic. Problem.
Exactly. But I don't think so it's early in the morning. He and Ajani, he planeswalks back. He and Ajani manage to isolate Jaya finally to confer with her before the UN resumes session. During the last day, every time they went to like the UN quarters, Karn was like obsessed with this like bird, this thrush that was just like hanging out on the window. So Ajani and Karn decide that they're going to go back to the negotiating table. But first, they're going to talk to Jaya. They managed to get her on her own. And the whole day before, they had seen this. Karn had been like watching this bird. Every time they're in the negotiations, Karn is like obsessively watching this bird, right? And he's like, well, this is weird. Birds aren't real. Something's going on.
No, it is. It is a fucking spy thing from the. It is the basic information recording device, right?
Like exactly. I have a quote for you guys now. The thrush was not even pretending to peck at invisible crumbs. Karn sees the bird. I know what you are. Karn, Jaya said. The bird's chest peeled open and cables shot out. The cables, slick with blood and slime, wrapped themselves around Karn's head. Goo slipped down his skin and a maw at the tentacle's core searched along Karn's cheek for purchase, its teeth scraping down the smooth metal. Karn readjusted his grip around the creature's slippery body, trying to pull it off from his face. But its wires had wrapped all the way around his head, locking together in a thick tangle at the nape of his neck. The creature's teeth caught on Karn's lip. It jabbed needle-like protuberances into him like it wanted to inject him with some substance, and the needle snapped. It's too close to Karn, Jaya shouted. I can't blast it. Let me, Ajani said. Slime sloughed off the creature and sizzled on Karn's skin, corroding his metal. It hurt. The creature snaked its tentacles between the joints on Karn's neck and around his collar as if trying to prise him apart. Karn grunted and squeezed his fingers between the creature's slippery body and his face. He forced it off of him, flinging it across the room where it smacked against the opposite wall and slid down. The creature caterpillar crawled toward the door. The fairy raised his hands, slowing the creature with a blurring field to prevent its rapid escape. Ajani lunged forward and pierced the creature with his claws, pinning it to the floor. It shrieked and writhed. Acid spurted from the wound. Karn, face still streaming from the creature's corrosive slime, held out both hands, one over the other. He generated a bird cage, built it upwards until the bars united into a dome. Ajani ripped the monstrosity from the floor and flung it into the cage. It rattled the bars, screeching. So,
still not killing things, eh?
But, well, okay, so good reason for this one, at the very least. Karn's like, maybe the fucking bureaucrats, the fucking politicians next door, this is his glass of fracking water, right? That he's like, right, I'm gonna make that fucking Exxon exec drink now.
Yeah, that, the real reason that birds have hollow bones is it's like the inside of a needle to put exactly. goo inside
hypodermic.
Of you to turn you into
hypodermic bones. Yes. Yeah,
hypodermic
bones. Oh my god! Yeah. I also love the fact that like the Phyrexians have infiltrated human society with their spies, but they fucked up the bird. Like the bird wasn't convincing enough, right?
Yeah, right. It's just too obvious. Okay, so I got one final quote. To wrap us up and bring us into next week. Karn placed the Phyrexian bird on the granite negotiating table. Jota leaned toward it, his eyes widening. The creature in the cage hissed at him. Aaron Capuchin looked sick. His Benelish knights had not moved, their discipline ironclad. Rada stared at it, eyes glittering. Her warriors had broken out into muttered prayers. Sten's lips had thinned in satisfaction that his point was made. They're here, Jota murmured. Among us. I told you, Sten said. Three of the Benelish knights exploded outward from their armor. Their eyes burst open in a shower of glistening black oil and their jaws distended. Metal teeth emerging from their flesh dud their gaping maws. Metallic fibers wriggled out from between the gaps in their armor. One of the creatures swung toward the granite table, his clawed hands drawn together in a double fist. It slammed its hands down on the granite table, cracking it in two. The negotiations are over, it said.
Oh man! Then he killed everyone. Invented.
Exactly. I had to linger on it. I couldn't. Yeah. I was like, man, I'm ending the episode with an Amogus. I can't believe it.
Yeah. Everyone, our brains are just broken. There,
they are. Yeah.
The internet is a curse.
Yeah.
I love also the fact that you've got Phyrexian agents in hiding for years, months, whatever, and this one is just like, I'm gonna say it. When I transform in the UN, I'm gonna say negotiations are over.
Yeah, exactly.
And all of them are just like, yeah, okay, man. He's like, I'm gonna say it. The negotiations are over. He's like, I can't, all that planning for nothing.
So I didn't touch on it earlier in the episode just because I thought it was like a good reveal at the end of the episode, and I thought this kind of buried the lead a little bit, but they talk about specifically, like, in the story it's good. I don't think I could have brought it up without you guys maybe guessing that this would have happened, but okay. They mentioned that like none of the sleeper cells are aware, and they specifically go into like, oh yeah, they wouldn't be aware that this is going to happen to them. So these these humans are like, their memories are wiped, so they just don't remember that they were kidnapped and subjected to horrid experiments, and then they're just like put back in their home with their wife and kids and are like, yep, you gotta go to work today, you know.
Oh, that's crazy. Until
something happens that threatens Phyrexia, and then they pop off essentially.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was Dominaria United part one. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I'm hoping to get this wrapped up in just a two-parter, but I've only done two out of the five stories so far. So if my track record is anything, it'll be at least three probably. And we'll see if I tangent to another magic story in the meantime. Yeah. Right?
Why make promises? You know what? We're talking about this story. It'll take us however long we want it to take.
Yeah. But if you like the episode and want to hear more, consider joining the Discord and letting me know there, or leaving a review on your podcast app of choice. It's the best way that we have of getting the show to grow, except for the even easier way of doing it, just talking with your friends about the show. And if you think they'd like it, then we'll get a new listener, hopefully.
Yeah, poison them. Just like these sleeper cells. All your friends are potential Loreboy sleeper cells.
Yeah, all your friends are birds, and they want to scratch up your face if you don't tell them about the Loreboys.
Yeah.
Jamie, anything you want to talk about?
Get in the Discord. That's where most of the stuff's happening. Go to loreboys.g. Oh, well, discord.gg/loreboys. Now I've caught the metal monster disease that makes me not know our links. but yeah, we've been playing some hardcore WoW with some folks in the server and stuff. So I can give you a guild invite and stuff, and you can laugh at me when I inevitably die. yeah, just come out there. That's where the best place to hang out. All the episode picks that we talked about and stuff, that'll be in the Prime section. So if you are a sub to our Patreon, which Ethan will get it to, you get a whole other list of perms and exclusivities in Discord. So Discord's where to find us most of the time.
Yeah. Peter, how about you?
At Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. Come check out our images. Say hello. Send us messages. I always love getting a little bit of appreciation there. Thank you, everybody, for all the follows as well. Otherwise that's about it. That's all that's going on for me.
Yeah, and if you want to support the show financially, help us keep the lights on, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/loreboys. We have a few tiers there where you can get access to different things. The biggest one is probably just, you know, the bonus content. Yeah. Where Jamie will complain very in depth about his hardcore character. We talk a lot about Sea of Stars again, which I have done for 2 weeks in a row because
I had a story I forgot to tell, but I only have one fork.
Okay. Yeah. That's a great start, honestly. You're a fucking 32-year-old man.
I bought a fork once and I never thought to buy another one.
Only once is the problem. You should do it multiple times.
you can't even buy, and I support buying secondhand, so like kudos to you, but you can't buy a single fork. No. Like firsthand.
I bought what I needed. I bought one fork. And there's a guy, an exterminator, who came by my apartment because I'm in a basement and whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Hey, I really worked up an appetite. You got a fork I could borrow?
He asked me to borrow my fork. Spaghetti?
No way.
He asked to borrow a fork, and I was like, let me find it here. And I found my one fork, and I gave it to him. Okay. And he didn't give it back.
What?
He didn't give it
you
back.
Were you forkless, and you were just like trying to?
I guess you could say someone lifted your fork, huh?
yeah, dude.
Like a forklift, Peter. We got a forklift.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Come on.
What? Yeah, dude. I was forking pissed. No, and I had for a week and a half, I didn't have a fork. And my neighbor.
Oh, fork.
Okay, is this going to end? You didn't go out and get forks, but your neighbor gave you a fork?
My neighbor opened the door as I was walking by. She heard the dogs jingles in the hallway. She's like, "Oh, James, Mary Olin, nice lady." She's like, "I have your fork."
Oh, fork!
I got my fork back. Apparently, he left it in her apartment while working, and then I was like, "Oh, thanks." It was my only one. And she's like, "What? You only have one fork?" As most people would say.
Good. She shouldn't react like that.
And I woke up this morning when I opened the door to go walk my dog at 8 o'clock or whatever. There's some plates, forks, knives, spoons. She gave me all the extras she had. So I am all forked up right now.
You gotta go do her favor, dude. Directly off a napkin with a plastic spoon for Jamie. Living
I don't have napkins.
One rag.
If this is your kind of story, this is all the bonus content is Jamie telling absolutely deranged stories from his life and me and Peter reacting to it. Basically.
Hey, man, one fork has got me through this. Every time I've needed it, I've had it, you know?
I do love the idea that all that stuff that your very kind neighbor gave you is going to go into a closet and never get used now. Also kind of sustains me, but
I'll use it, yeah.
That's just more dishes for the sink, right? So if you want more stories like that, we got hours and hours and hours of them on patreon.com/theloreboys. And if you don't trust Big Patreon, of course, we do always have Loreboys Prime, where this week we are collecting cutlery. It's a cutlery drive for your old boy, Jim. But what else do you need, Jimmy?
I have a lot of knives. I have I used to have more forks than spoons. I somehow got down to one fork. I had like 3 forks and 2 spoons. Now I have like 4 spoons and 1 fork. Well, I've got the whole new injection of cutlery into the apartment economy, but I'll give you a fresh count next week, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie will post his inventory on the Patreon of what he has. He's get a registry going of what he has and what he needs. But if you guys
I need more
send
glasses.
Over, you know, Napkin holders, glasses, salt and pepper shaker. You got a salt and pepper shaker?
Yeah, yeah, I have a few of those. But okay. I have the one that you buy at the store.
Several salt and pepper shakers, but one fork.
Every time I want to go buy new pepper, I don't buy the
you got corn skewers?
A steak with a salt shaker, cutting with a knife.
I need more glasses. I remember Dara came over once and she's like, "You don't have enough glasses." And I was like, "I didn't expect 20 people to be in my apartment."
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And I think that would cost you a lore boy.
Lore boy. Oh my god. Out of forks.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I knew that one would be a hit. I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to give you guys an inkling until the show. Yeah.
Hilarious.
But I love how it made its way home, the little fork, like the little toaster.
I like to think that.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.